Before we start the pod, a quick mention of the band. Roger and I both harbour very strong feelings towards the Arctic Monkeys. The band, sizable Sheffield Wednesday fans, aren't catching many games at Hillsborough right now. They're on tour here in America, supporting their new album, AM, which Rolling Stone called a game changer.
That's German for Vendepunkt.
You can buy AM on iTunes and at the Domino Records web store. That's at dominorecordco.com/AM.
To the pod.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, an international break special.
Special. Not so special.
Yeah, I know.
I miss football,
oh,
David.
God, I miss it so much. I actually read a book this weekend. That's how much I miss football.
That's crazy.
I know, really crazy.
That's the saddest thing I ever heard.
Yeah. Well, is it as sad as this, Rog? The most British story of all time from the English Independent. Parrot returns to British owner speaking Spanish 4 years after disappearing. A very British pet parrot named Nigel has been reunited with his owner after disappearing 4 years ago, but he now speaks Spanish. Nigel, a grey African parrot, flew away from his home in California in 2010, but was returned to his British owner, Darren Chick, after he was discovered in Torrance, California. Although the Spanish-speaking bird bit Mr. Chick when he first saw him, the happy owner said, "He's doing perfect." Mr. Chick says his bird's British accent is gone, replaced by fluent Spanish, and now answers to the name of Larry. Not a particularly Spanish name, Rog. Even though he has no idea where the bird has been for the last 4 years, he claimed, "It's really weird. I knew it was him from the minute I saw him." Nigel was discovered by Julia Sperling, who owns a dog grooming parlour. This has got to be a plot of an old episode of Magnum.
It's a slow news day at the Independent when there's no
really
football.
After she took him in as he matched a missing pet advertisement she had seen.
She must have memorised them from 4 years ago. She's amazing.
"He was the happiest bird. He was singing and talking without control. He was barking like the dogs," she said. "I'm from Panama." And he was saying, oh, sorry. So she's from Panama. I've got to redo that accent. "He was the happiest bird. He was singing and talking without control. He was barking like the dogs," she said. "I'm from Panama." And he was saying, "What happened?" in Spanish.
Oh.
Well, what did happen, Rog?
That sounds like an investigation. On one hand, I've got to tell you, I can imagine the emotional outburst upon the reunion of Mr. Chick and Nigel / Larry.
Yeah.
It must have been like Hanks reuniting with Helen Hunt at the end of Castaway.
Similar.
Or a little bit like Jose Mourinho when the Nemanja Matic re-signed for Chelsea. Probably more like that.
Sweet.
"Love endures, even if you do bite me on the nose. Now only speak Spanish and answer to the name Larry."
Yeah.
But the other side of me, the more I sit with this story, David, the more uncomfortable it makes me.
Because?
Like Animal Farm or Chronicles of Narnia, I don't think it's just about Nigel / Larry.
Uh-huh.
I think it's really a story about what lies under the surface.
Yeah.
You thinking what I'm thinking?
I don't know. I'm just really mostly thinking about how confusing it is that he was called Nigel and in his Spanification became Larry. That's, for me, the most confusing part of the story.
That's the key part, because it's clearly a thinly veiled symbol of our once great empire and the shattered imperialistic endeavours of Britain, outrun by changing forces, demographics, foreign policy, run awry.
Yeah.
You know, we're constantly being bitten in the nose, we English, having to care for Larry. Always caring for Larry.
Always the parrots. It always starts with the parrots, Rog.
First they came for the parrots. It's like a Rudyard Kipling poem, David. Recessional. Uh-huh. "Judge of the nations, spare us yet. Lest we forget.
In better news for the Empire, Rog, Lena Dunham gave us a shout out on Instagram. How did that happen? I feel like there were machinations behind this from you.
No.
John Glazer?
I don't know who John Glazer. Her Instagram, what was the message?
I immediately thought that must be a friend of yours. Thanks to my wonderful friend John Glazer, I was found out about these guys, very odd people to be watching HBO Girls.
Yeah.
Something like that. And I assume John Glazer.
And a video of you and me talking about girls on the Men in Blazers.
Well, we did the most Brooklyn-like beards in the most hipster beards in the Premier League.
I think I was a little lonelier than the cloud this weekend because this story also made me ultimately feel sad, like Nigel / Larry.
Because?
Why are we unlikely girls viewers? Because we're middle-aged ball blokes.
Yeah.
I realised after years of being stereotyped,
yeah,
women being stereotyped, Lena Dunham is just taking it all out on you and me.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I would actually say we're almost prototypical HBO subscribers, though.
Yeah, I'm also prototypical Team Shoshana.
Yeah.
So to you, Lena Dunham, you hurt me, okay. You hurt my feelings, but I can deal with it because I've got my big girl pants on.
Maybe I mean stereotypical. We're either prototypical or stereotypical.
I think you're stereotypical and I'm prototypical. Yeah. You know, the best part of International Weekend for me, Davo,
yeah,
was that there was no Men in Blazers show inflicted upon America.
We had nothing to talk about, without a doubt.
Yeah, a lot of you seem to have watched a little show called Monday Night Football to pick up the slack with an up-and-comer who I was impressed by, a young guy called Mike Tirico.
Yeah.
Did make me happy watching a lot of NFL this weekend.
Uh-huh.
How much football is just aching to be like football.
Yeah.
There was a Miami Dolphin defensive back wearing a pair of Nike socks.
I saw
that. Do you like
that? He's wearing football shoes, cleats, boots.
There was the tie.
Yeah.
Between the Panthers and the Bengals.
Oh, we love a draw.
I didn't know you could tie in the NFL, said my favourite rookie, Kelvin Benjamin. And then there's just been three in the past 5 years. And then there was a TIFO at the Philadelphia Eagles game.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Before we know it, Dave, I believe this is a prediction.
Yeah.
Don't like to go out on a limb,
mm-hmm.
but the NFL will go all the way and start hosting Super Bowl somewhere weather inappropriate like Qatar.
Yeah, well, they certainly did it in New York last year.
They love a warm Super Bowl, Miami, Pasadena, Phoenix, Qatar.
Yeah, we'll see. I was reduced to watching NBA preseason basketball, Rog, and women's golf. That's where my sporting weekend went.
Kevin Love.
Just not a lot of sport on. Such a packed show today, Rog. We're going to pretend we didn't miss the Premier League as much as Robbie Musto missed Robbie Earl.
Mummy.
Do you think that's the way that relationship goes? Do you think Robbie Musto loves Robbie Earl more or Robbie Earl loves Robbie Musto more?
That's one of those.
Because in all relationships, there's one person who loves more.
That kind of question.
Yeah.
It's like when I was a child and my mum told me that space goes on for infinity. I just couldn't get my head around it. I'd always try and draw a line in space.
Yeah.
And then she'd just say, but what's on the other side?
Yeah.
And then she'd say, more space. Yeah. I could never get... And also... What else makes my brain hurt is, what is it for you and me? Who loves the other one more?
I think it changes a lot. I think it depends what day or week you ask us.
Yeah, there's a thin line
between
love and a lot more love.
Yeah, that's true.
The Pretenders
song. I might be a little more consistent than you. But that's a good question for us to ask the Robbies when we get them on the show. I can't wait to get the Robbies on the show. It's the whole reason we've got two guest microphones. We're going to feign excitement for the international break, Rog. We're going to discuss Landon Donovan's final US men's national team game and the plodding dullness of Euro 2016 qualification.
It's like a lukewarm bath.
I know, everyone qualifies. In it. Everyone qualifies. We're going to tend to your Ravens. We're going to welcome a senator.
Jefferson Smith.
Well, a big senator, Rog. A real live American elected official, a GFOP actually, Rog. Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania. He's going to talk about FIFA, Rog. Oh. Corruption, as though those two things go together, and Sepp Blatter.
Is he pro or anti-corruption?
I would say he's anti-corruption.
We'll find out.
Rog.
I've got a lot of questions about Veep for him.
Yeah, okay. That's good. And House of Cards. We've got a lot of questions for him. Okay, Rog. To the football.
Oh, David.
Let's get the Guinness cracked open. Oh, you tapped yours very, very nicely there.
Oh, David. To Tweed and democracy.
Yeah, absolutely. Both
and
of those.
Football coming back
they
into
are,
our life.
They're strangely connected, Tweed and democracy, Rog. We need to write that book. The US men's national team won. Ecuador won. The Landon Donovan farewell telenovela, Rog. The US men's national team took a fifth-minute lead, courtesy of the flowing locks of Mix Discarude.
Ooh,
But in the 88th minute, a swerving strike from West Ham's Ena Valencia wrong-footed Brad Guzan and levelled the score, forcing the US to see St. Landon off with a draw, affected the narrative. This was a weird, weird spectacle.
It was. Rog. It wasn't. I didn't understand it. It wasn't like Kyle Beckerman was retiring or anything.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't that big.
No. I mean, why was it weird, David? I thought,
It was weird because ESPN sort of committed to this narrative of the story of the Landon's final game, the opening movie and everything. And at the same time, seemed to be distancing themselves from whether this was a correct thing to throw an international testimonial. Plus, this very strained and odd relationship between Jürgen and Landon, which is sort of like when your mummy and daddy are fighting. It's like a little bit awkward for the Outlaws, for US fans, for the US media to go and deal with. It was just awkward, Rog, the whole thing.
I mean, you could say it was an oddly conceived farewell. I mean, the way Landon was dispatched before the World Cup, it was, even Eddard Stark said that was weird. I spent the day with Landon last week, and he told me, he's reduced it down to this. He said, I sort of have to see it in a way that Jürgen and I just see the world differently, which is a very generous way of looking at it. It was very odd. I mean, in the run-up to the game, everything did feel a bit a house divided against itself cannot stand. Alexi was tweeting about whether or not Jürgen and his son Jonathan had reached out to Landon to apologise for the bad-natured split over the summer.
Oh, this was a storm in a teacup, Rush.
I honestly found the inability of all parties to find a way to pull this off in high style just a reminder of how small US soccer really is. And I loved Alexi's tweet when he said, you know, I'm not sure I really care about any of this, but he felt a duty to put it out there. It all felt a bit like when Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart had to promote the final Twilight together. It was all strangely, like, subtextually conflictual. It felt bigger than the Civil War. It felt like Elizabeth Hasselbeck returning to The View, or how I'd imagine that to go down, Dave-O. Are you Team Landon or are you Team Jürgen? That's a question.
Well, yeah. I mean, mostly I'm Team. There aren't that many international games to prepare for where you're going forward. And it seemed a very odd way in the wake of this. Didn't feel like forward motion. And the US, I think, are at a critical time of their development. Jürgen has only so many dates. And it felt to me that this was a very strange way to go and look back and thank. I mean, I think it's kind of insane that Landon's retiring anyway. He still has so much good football in him. And we could debate for a long time whether or not he should have retired, whether or not he should be still playing for the US men's national team. But it was just an odd event.
At Eric John Jensen tweeted us in response to that question, and he said, as a US men's national team fan, I am Team Jürgen, but as a human being, I'm Team Landon. Not everything is about sport. And I thought that was very apt in a way.
But did this make Landon feel any better, do you think? I mean, it gave him his sign-off to his fans, but ultimately, when he looks back at his whole career, when he gets over that one night in Hartford and the, I believe, you know, we will win, what does that really do for him, that one game,
when he's had such a
spectacular career?
I asked him that question, and what he said to me was, was Sunil Galati originally phoned him up to ask him to do this? His initial response was, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I'm too raw. This is not how I want to spend my time, particularly not in the midst of MLS, the playoff run. And then Sunil called him back and said, well, do it your way, whatever you want, whatever it takes. You can stay wherever you want to stay. You can come in whenever you want to come in. You can leave whenever you want to leave. And he said he thought about it, and he said he did this for his family, for whom a US soccer career was a major part of Landon's identity. And they were all headed to Brazil, and then they had Brazil taken away from them. And he said he honestly did it for his pet. They had 19 Landon Donovan family members there.
Yeah.
He said he wanted to give his family kind of a closure on his US career. I mean, I'll say, in Team Landon, Team Jürgen, I don't know if this game brought the best out of Jürgen, who seemed largely absent in all of the kind of festivities and ceremonies, apart from his swipes that, quote, Landon Donovan could have done more in his career. And it made me think about the old adage about football managers who were once great players occasionally have blind spots in that they can't relate to normal players or lesser players.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Hoddle, when he was England manager, the players used to joke about him behind his back. He'd be like, can't you just do this? He'd say to his midfielders.
He'd constantly perform drills that he knew that they couldn't themselves perform.
He'd do the equivalent of just unbelievable breakdancing moves with the football and be like, can you do it? Like dance-offs. And the players would be like, no, we can't, boss.
Mm-hmm.
Klinsmann said to me many times about Landon, he said, I just don't understand why he'd take a break, a sabbatical. He could never get over that, Jürgen. He says, you can take a break when you've retired. I actually admired that Landon used the platform of the farewell to talk so candidly about depression that's clearly tinged his career. I went back in the clippings, the media clippings. He was 23 when he first threatened to retire, when he came back from Leverkusen, said he wasn't happy anymore, didn't enjoy football. Football was joy for him. It was no longer joyful. I mean, there's been several points in his career, 2006 World Cup, where he seriously thought about leaving the game. And I really admired the way, in this moment, when many athletes would have tried to kind of swaddle their own legacy, Landon instead spoke about depression, the mental side of the game, and his own battles with it.
And look, there is an enormous amount to admire about Landon Donovan. Certainly he's a human, and he's brought that to the fore in many of his statements and the honesty and candor of many of his interviews. But what seemed to get bizarrely diminished in this game for me was just the spectacular nature of Landon's whole career. And that's what is difficult about a testimonial. It's a testimonial game. A single game of football is not a way to honor somebody's entire career as a footballer, which for Landon has been so spectacular. And what are we going to do now? Are we going to do the same thing for Clint Dempsey when he retires? Are we going to do the same thing for Tim Howard when he retires?
National holiday for KB5.
And look, Alexi made, I thought, a very good point on the broadcast of saying, like, every person who has suited up for the US deserves the credit and deserves the recognition. Then part of playing for your national team is that you're all equal and you're all there. And I thought it was a well-made point.
To your point, the fascinating thing about Landon, and I'm working on this film now with John Hott that was seeking to kind of answer this question, is how many of us actually remember the great Landon, the blonde-haired Landon? Landon, by the way, I asked Landon why he dyed his hair blonde. He said, "I regret it. It hastened the balding process." Loved it. I was like, yeah.
Nothing was getting in the way of that. It's true. Nothing was going to stop that, Rog. It was going. I love it. People invent, that's what made me bald. It was going.
We should both dye our hair blonde now. Dave. Yeah, and see if it reverses the process. So I just believe that so many of the great moments, the young, fresh-faced Landon who kind of burst onto the national team and scored on his debut against Mexico within 70 minutes, so few of us saw that Landon. We trot out the numbers about his statistics, his records, but we really don't remember. He's the one giant of American soccer who's kind of straddled the period from darkness until light.
From when nobody watched until everybody is watching.
When he began his career, to be the greatest soccer player in America was like being the greatest didgeridoo player, the greatest yo-yo.
That's true.
No one cared. And I think almost it's a celebration of that transition more than anything. Landon now talks about going back to university to study business. He talks about coaching 15 to 17-year-olds. He talks about becoming a broadcaster. And I think he could be great if he kind of irons out the nices and the cools and the sads and the awesomes which litter any Californian's vocabulary and kind of subs them out for stories that he can tell about himself and his career. Stories that he's probably smothered and tried not to talk about because athletes try and, like Derek Jeter, try and say so little to the press. But he does. He's got the demeanor of a former child star ground down by the entertainment business. I'd love him to become US coach just so he can drop Jonathan Klinsmann when the time is right. Fitting. When I asked him, he loves to talk about his reading. I asked him what he's reading last year, and he told me he was reading Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet.
Oh, yeah. Extraordinarily difficult names to pronounce in anything like a German accent. Letters to a Young Poet. "So you mustn't be frightened if a sadness rises in front of you, larger than any you have ever seen. If an anxiety like light and cloud shadows moves over your hands and over everything you do, you must realize that something is happening to you, that life has not forgotten you, that it holds you in its hand and will not let you fail." From Vladimir Rilke, Letters to a Young Poet.
And that is for Landon, Dave.
Yeah.
But to the game itself.
Yeah.
I started weird. Bob Lee and Alexi Lalas in full beards.
Oh, my word. It was so beardy.
He looks like Roy Keane's facial hair role model, Bob Lee. He looks like a young Kenny Loggins.
Yeah.
I love his beard.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it?
I never believed that Bob Lee could become any warmer a human being.
Yes.
But he's now even warmer.
It makes
with that
his
beard.
Eyes
the warmest man of all time looks even warmer.
It makes his eyes sparkle like my bald head in studio light.
He's warmer than Santa Claus, Rog.
I emailed him during the game and I asked him to tell us the thinking behind the beard.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote back, he said, "I'm simply preparing for the next Snow Classico." He goes, "Seriously, I last shaved the morning of the final, July 13th.
Yeah.
Remind your many loyal GFOPs that you and Davo were present in the nascent moments of said beard when he came to New York and we had lunch."
Yeah, it's very true. He did. He was a little bit beardy.
Don't do anything with it. Just keep growing it. I love it.
I wonder if Bob watches Girls on HBO, Rog.
I think he's the stereotypical, prototypical Girls watcher.
He's something. He's atypical, I think he would be.
He's probably Team Marnie.
Yeah,
probably,
that's his kind of woman.
game is all about the next generation.
Yeah.
These young kids have no fear, said Jürgen to the press as he talked about the Greg Garzas and the Joe Coronas that he was trying to audition. He's looking to see the next generation of players coming through. It's so fascinating. He's clearly trying to ratchet up the heat on people who... He's doing everything he can to ratchet the heat up on anyone who thinks their place is guaranteed in this next cycle.
I mean, certainly stepped up his critique of American soccer culture, Rog, declaring Clint Dempsey and Michael Bradley must prove they have not lost a step by returning to MLS. He said this with Josie sitting right beside him, apparently, Rog, sending out a clear message to the young American striker.
Yeah, he really went after Michael Bradley, talking about how his form may have suffered by his return to MLS, and then he must show that has, quote, not hurt his game. He has to prove he hasn't, quote, lost it a little bit. We have to remember, Jürgen is not the commissioner of MLS. We often conflate the two things.
Yeah.
He loves MLS. He loves it to grow. He wants it to be as good as he can. But in a way, he's a bit like the minority leader of the US House of Representatives. I guess he's the Nancy Pelosi of American soccer.
Interesting.
He wants 23 players for this next World Cup who are as good as they can be. It's not his job to grow MLS. He simply cares about his squad. And last cycle, he was kind of spiky on occasion, but he was really...
Well, he's trying to take the team to the third, fourth playoff game, Rog. He's trying to take them to the promised land.
He wants to lose
in
that
third or fourth.
He wants fourth. He's got his eyes on fourth. That's third's greedy.
He wants to lose a World Cup semi-final.
Yeah, and that's it, Dave. So what do you need to become fourth? Yeah. No more Mr. Nice Guy. No more diplomacy. I think he's looking to force each of his players up to the next level. He wants everyone out of their comfort zone. No more living in luxury. So Sunil Gulati in Honduras in the last cycle, he admitted that the US soccer culture was, quote, pampered.
Mm-hmm.
Jürgen wants a squad of hungry players. He's attacking everything. He wants promotion and relegation. He's very pro in that side of the debate. Bradley must go back to Europe. Everyone must try and push themselves. And Josie sitting by, and what must have been going through his head, David?
Well, he certainly used his trip home to suggest that his days at Sunderland may be numbered, Rog. Right now, it doesn't look like it fits so well, is what he said about the Black Cats.
Come and get me, please.
Rumours of Burnley, Rog, coming in for Josie.
Well, MLSsoccer.com reported a number of European teams have been in for Josie, including Lille. They also said Altidore has received attention from a few, quote, mystery MLS teams, but he's not ready to come back home at this juncture in his career. It's hard to believe he's only 24. The Sunderland Echo.
Yeah.
I love the Sunderland Echo. It's one of my daily reads. They article today about a rumour Burnley are coming in hard for Josie.
Yeah.
It's called Sunderland's Josie Altidore shrugs off Burnley speculation. I just love him. He's such a shrugger.
He doesn't like Dave Fishwick's minibus rentals.
Well, Burnley might be the perfect fit for Josie, David.
Yeah.
Burnley players are not actually expected to score goals.
Nope.
They don't like it.
No, they don't like it. He'll fit in perfectly. You know, just I have to correct myself on something I said earlier. I said that Jürgen Klinsmann is stepping up the attacks on MLS. Attacks is probably the wrong word also. He's being consistent. This is what he has said forever. He wants his players, or certainly a nucleus of his squad, or the nucleus of the elite players in his squad, he wants them playing in Europe.
But he's turning up the volume, Dave, and he's becoming more aggressive and proactive. And picking his target.
Yeah, or it's being reported more. I mean, he's always said it. I remember at South by Southwest, Rog, when you interviewed him at Southwest Sports, that fantastic interview, he said pretty much the same thing right then.
But this is our political podcast. We have a senator coming on. This is his second term, in effect, Dave, a second campaign. You kind of feel in a second term, his gloves are off. First cycle through.
Yeah.
He had to keep people on side. He had to be a little bit more diplomatic. I do expect that in this one, Jürgen Klinsmann is going to be a slightly more abrasive, slightly more aggressive, slightly more vocal. He's going to do anything, any which way, to get this team ready to lose in the semi-finals.
How about the game itself, Rog, though?
A couple of players stood out, David.
Yeah.
Fifth minute, the future took the lead. Mix Diskerud, Nordic Messi, our new number 10, David. It was very symbolic. He whipped the ball into the net. DeAndre Yedlin with the killer pass after Josie whiffed. Mix.
It was a fantastic whiff from Josie. It kept the ball in control.
It was almost Danny Welbeck-esque.
He nutmegged himself, somehow keeping the ball in play and retained possession. I've never seen anything like it.
I can imagine in a cubicle in Burnley, the managers
people
just
got
like,
very excited
watching
about
it in slow-mo, backwards and forwards. You see that? It's almost like Danny Welbeck.
Yeah.
I love Mix, David. I love his bold, creative decision-making. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ecuador really gave him space to exploit. He did so decisively, and he flung himself around like the best-looking strong safety in the name of defense. Mix is growing, said Jürgen, and I've asked him to become more aggressive, to challenge more one-on-one situations, become more physical. I mean, I think Jürgen more and more is going all in on Mix. The other guy who caught my eye was Greg Garza, full of optimism.
Yeah, had a good game.
Yeah, I mean, as the US sought to knock the ball around the park, building up from the back against Ecuador, who you could say were vaguely interested in actually playing
yeah,
football.
Yeah, sporadically.
He caught my eye. What did you feel when Landon hit the post?
Oh, well, I thought Post had a good game, Rog. You really needed, for the full narrative of this to take effect, for the fairy tale, you needed Landon to score, Rog. We all wanted Landon to score.
Yeah, he told me that you can tell when you hit the ball whether it's going in or not. And uh-huh. You could tell from his body language he believed that ball was going in.
Yeah.
But he was substituted slightly afterwards. Joe Corona came in the 41st minute. Landon gets the standing ovation. And it must be described as what I think is probably the most awkward handshake since Yitzhak Rabin and Yasser Arafat pressed the flesh on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
Jürgen, he's such a consummate politician. You see, he held Landon. Yeah. For a couple of minutes, for a very brief conversation for the cameras. I'd love to know what he whispered into London's ear. London just wanted to move on and hug the kit men.
He probably said you could have achieved more in your career.
Oh, it was so weird. It was surreal. It was like a forced celebration with a boss who just humiliated you and caused you searing pain. It was like watching Sansa have to hang out with Joffrey and visit her father's head on the battlements of King's Landing. Game then wilted. Both teams huffed and puffed. Ecuador picked up the equaliser in slop time. Mm-hmm. Enner Valencia catching Brad Guzan flat-footed. I mean, he dipped that ball in a... It was
otherworldly,
it was,
Rog.
It was otherworldly. Also otherworldly was Bobby Wood momentarily forgetting that Chris Wondolowski is crap and passing over a last American chance and allowing it to die out harmlessly. Very, very sad. I wonder what Landon will do now, Dave. I've got a feeling he's going to come back. I wonder if he's retired in the Barbra Streisand sense of the word.
Yeah, it has a little bit of a... I would not be surprised if we see him play football again.
At SRE, K. Can said, yep, he's going to have a fling with Andre Agassi.
That's very funny.
The last thing I'd say on this game, Dave.
Yeah.
Post-World Cup hangover seems to have kind of impacted the team's national profile. It sort of felt a little small ball. Tonight, barely 10,000 tickets are sold for the game against Honduras in Florida. Just from a commercial perspective, Ecuador and Honduras, neither team really seems to burnish the team's branding in the US. I mean, Brazil and Argentina are battling each other in China. Europe's ensconced in the Euros. I'd honestly, I'd prefer to watch the US play itself. Play a game where the US-American-based players play the US-European players.
Oh, that would be a fantastic game.
I'd rather watch that. Starting place up for lad for grabs. Hammers and tongs. One nation, two teams.
Yeah.
Romando versus Guzan.
Yes.
Oh, Josie versus Wondo.
Yeah.
Kyle Beckerman versus Mick Diskerud.
Yeah.
A battle that could be sponsored by Just For Men.
I'd like to see that, Rog. But you know what? They are playing these games in strange locations. You don't exactly think of Hartford, Connecticut. And even, you know, South Florida has a very mixed history with hosting U.S. men's national team games. I'm not sure that those were the greatest locations to play these in the wake of the World Cup, Rog. Anyway, we're taping this pod Tuesday afternoon, a few hours before the U.S. men's national team officially begins life after Landon, Rog. LAL. The team that plays Honduras tonight in Boca will be drastically different than Friday's. Klinsmann has called up Dempsey, Bradley, Jermaine Jones, Rog, Matt Besler, and Graham Zuzzi. We also expect to see Nick Romando, and I'm Team Romando.
Get
all 90 minutes in goal for the US team.
Tonight, Southern Florida is going to smell a little bit of Moscow.
Yeah, Moscow. It will, Rog. Over to Europa. Opa, Rog. Estonia 0, England 1. England remain perfect. That's hardly perfect in 2016 Euro qualifying, despite an unconvincing performance in Tallinn. A 73rd minute Wayne Rooney free kick. It was a good free kick, actually. Rescued Roy Hodgson's men against a 10-man Estonia.
Rob Stonia.
The win came after England dispatched of San Marino 5-0 on Thursday at Wembley. Raheem Sterling, Rog. It's come in for a lot of criticism by some for asking not to feature in England's starting 11 for the Euro 2016 qualifier against Estonia because he was a little tired. Poor little lamb.
Roy Hodgson's just boring him. You're boring me, Hodgson. We'll get to Raheem in a minute. I'd say England, David.
Yeah.
Two more wins.
Yeah.
Very little adulation.
Yeah.
Here's my concern. You get shoved in a qualifying group with Slovenia, Lithuania, Estonia. It sounds like a bad Beach Boys song.
Yeah.
Slovenia, Lithuania, Estonia,
Switzerland. Yeah, exactly.
The players' minds are clearly on the Premier League.
Well, they beat Switzerland in the first game, and that sort of ended the group. As we said, congratulations on qualification.
England games have taken on all of the non-happening of an REM album after Automatic for the People.
That's very true.
Two wins without ever managing to inspire the nation. Both games this week, the English public voted Joe Hart as man of the match.
Yeah,
he made one save against San Marino.
Wow.
That is death row humour.
Yeah.
And I think there's a serious side to all of this rotten draw. It's like, for me, England are like Texas Southern emerging from the Southwestern Athletic Conference. You know I love the SWAC.
Yeah.
They'll definitely reach Euro 2016, but they're not going to be tested along the way. The players are not going to be battle-hardened. And Roy, Honourable Roy, Uncle Roy Hodgson.
Yeah.
He was never really going to know who's going to thrive in the international level. Who's going to be our central defenders? How good is John Stones as opposed to Phil Jones?
Mm-hmm.
Is Jack Wilshere really international quality?
Yeah.
Can Welbeck and Sturridge coexist together? Mm-hmm. Does that worry you, David?
Well, I think he's probably hoping, unlike Jurgen Klinsmann, that he's going to see a lot of his players playing in elite European football, quite apart from the Premier League. He's going to see them playing in Champions League, Europa League, and across Europe. As to whether or not that has any bearing on how England do, I think more significant for England's future is that the under-21s qualified tonight for the European Under-21 Championships. The 20s came off that huge win last year. And in the age groups, England are doing very well, playing very competitively. I mean, look, overall, the thing I felt this weekend is it's not only not good for England what's happening in the build-up to this ridiculous 24-team Euros when almost everybody qualifies. It's quite nice for the smaller nations who are getting, seem to be infused with belief.
Oh, we love Scotland.
Oh, Scotland. Poland had a big win.
I like the Iceland.
Iceland, we're both Team Iceland. Rog, we're going to get to that. This is a problem overall with the format of football. You come off the World Cup, people love it. People love international football. And then we go into this really very poor period for 2 years. Of qualifications for Euros. I know we've got Copa America coming up in 2016. Gold Cup before that. But it's a very weird period for 2 years after a World Cup.
I said Gold Cup in a way that I'm trying to make myself
believe about it. But it's a very weird two-year period. And certainly international football, national team football, is not prepared for the modern television age.
Right? Oh, that's so well said, David. By the way, a slightly smaller point. The moment of doom I had over the weekend was when Jack Wilshere revealed Wayne Rooney has, quote, become the dad figure in the England squad.
Yeah.
It's made me feel like dad figure in the kind of Frank Gallagher, George Bluth.
Yeah.
Kind of, that is truly, truly conjuring frightening images. Talking about dads, talking about sons, a boy who is old enough to be both of our son, Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
Excuse me for being human.
Yeah.
He tweeted. A man who's featured 14 times for club and country this season, started on 12 occasions after making 44 appearances last year. He's played 9 games, Davo, between September the 3rd and October the 4th. He's been to a World Cup. He's been elevated as England's only hope.
Yeah.
And he's also so crucial to Liverpool's season right now with Daniel Sturridge out and the De Camp Luis Suarez. He's absolutely pivotal there. What's your thoughts on all of this?
Well, this felt like a media-obsessed story in lieu of real news. The press deciding to batter. By the way, both Raheem Sterling and Roy Hodgson both got battered.
I think they battered Roy Hodgson with Raheem Sterling.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, that doesn't hurt very much. That seems fair enough.
It's like I'd like to batter Eric Clapton with Phil Collins one day. It'd be amazing.
Yeah. Alan Shearer, former England striker, wrote in The Sun, the working man who is up at 6 a.m. and home at 8 p.m. does not want to hear about how tired a 19-year-old professional footballer is. I genuinely have never heard something like that in my career, certainly not in a squad I was involved in. Similarly, Roy Hodgson was criticised for going public with what Raheem Sterling said as though he wasn't protecting him. However, before that, Roy Hodgson was criticised for dropping Raheem Sterling and not revealing. He said that these conversations should remain private. He gets battered for not revealing what the conversation was and for dropping him. And when he reveals what said, he's battered for not protecting him. This is a no-win situation.
Like, poor Roy Hodgson is like a lab rat who just keeps, he's got his testicles wired with electrodes and is just consistently being zapped by scientists with no reason other than just to zap a rat's testicles. The thing that annoys me about the kind of, oh, he should be playing, he's only young, we've never heard of this before, is that there's a physical stress on a footballer which we understand and appreciate. We know all about cruciates. We know every kind of ACL injury at this point. But the psychological toll, maybe I'm after spending time with Landon thinking about this a huge amount. I mean, he talked about how there were just so many times in his career where he said, for my sanity after Leverkusen, for my happiness, I had to take a break. Aaron Johansson, who I spent time with in Holland just before the World Cup, he said as a young guy, he'd played 70 games last season because the team did so well, Alkmaar, in the Europa League. He said his body had never kind of played 70 games and he didn't know how to keep in peak shape. And ultimately, he was injured during the World Cup. English football and football fans in general, they're just unwilling to recognise any kind of psychological side to the game. Burnout's real. Just look at Wayne Rooney and his precipitous drop as he got older with the weight of the country on his back. And I think Raheem Sterling is a bloody good footballer.
Yeah.
I think, as we keep saying, a year ago, Liverpool were talking about possibly loaning him out for more play. Suddenly, he's the kind of second coming. Yeah. He's our future. It's an incredible amount of pressure to be put on a 19-year-old's shoulders. And if we do care, we'll give him time to mature and give him space to make those kind of decisions.
And Rog, taking the psychological out of it, we don't know that had anything to do with it. Just physically, he's a paperweight of a footballer, explosive in terms of his speed, to the way he plays, his lightness is all going to affect his fatigue. He has never played anything like this much football before the last year. He wasn't really making the team regularly until December of last year. This year, January through the World Cup, he's played more football than he's ever played before. Of course, he is likely to be a little bit tired. Thank God, or he wouldn't be pushing himself hard enough.
Leave off Raheem.
In other games of critical importance,
they're bigger than that.
Poland 2, Germany 0. This actually was important. Poland beats their neighbours and heated rivals for the first time ever. Rog, as I tweeted, this was their greatest result since the third Silesian uprising of 1921. Second half goals from Arkadiusz Milik and Sebastian Milo handed the World Cup winners their first loss in 19 competitive matches.
Tough times for Germany.
Yep.
Economists suggest the nation is dipping ever closer to recession.
Yep.
And worse, they're no longer invincible on the football field.
Yeah.
I mean, we should say this is one of football's great rivalries.
Yeah.
It's born of the Nazi occupation of Poland in the Second World War, fueled by a perceived German predilection to pick off the best Polish talent like Miroslav Klose.
And Podolski.
In 2008, there was a diplomatic incident ahead of the Euros. The Polish national newspaper Super Express provoked outrage in Germany by depicting then coach Bienhacker clutching the severed bloody heads of German captain Michael Ballack and coach Jurgi Löw in his bloody hands. So this game was a national triumph in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
First Polish win over Germany. Michał Pol from Prison Gladspotowy says Poland's surprise win was, quote, a miracle, something that shouldn't happen according to nature, physics, and Murphy's Law.
Wow.
Whereas Gazetska Polska were slightly less hyperbolic.
As they always are.
Harking back to the Battle of Grunwald, or the First Battle of Tannenberg, as you know it, Davo, in 1410.
Yeah.
When Polish-led forces dealt the Teutonic Knights a crushing defeat, their headline was Poland-Germany, 1410 to 2014, 2-0. On the front page. Don't know what that means, but I love it.
It must mean that the Third Silesian Uprising was not as significant as I thought it was. Also, Rog, The Economist suggested the victory is a product of the stabilization of the Polish economy in general. Not satisfied with the single football win, Puls Biznesu, a daily, put together a list of six measures of economic performance comparing Germany and Poland, ranging from quarterly GDP growth to changes in employment and salaries. Poland came out ahead in all six, Rog. It's difficult to talk of an economic boom in Poland, but compared to Germany, we aren't doing badly at all, said Puls Biznesu. I'm going to pick up that paper.
Oh, David. In truth, Poland, 70th in the FIFA rankings.
Yeah.
They mustered 4 shots.
Yeah.
They conceded 22 attempts on their own goal.
Wow.
Arsenal's Szczęsny was man of the match. He was like a Polish De Gea.
Mm-hmm.
Germany begin life in the post-Philipp Lahm era with a little speed bump. The national stadium in Warsaw was packed. It felt 57,000 people, David, made it like a cauldron. May Wembley be like that one day. Jurgi Love post-game.
Oh, yeah. If you ask me what the mood is like now, fury is the wrong word. Anger is the wrong word. But what you can feel is some kind of determination that we badly want these 3 points against Ireland.
This afternoon.
Angry is not the right word. Fury!
It's not the right word. If anger's not the right word, fury's not the right word. Was Lowe looking for the word scary?
Yeah.
David? Was he looking for bloody frightening?
Slovakia 2, Spain 1. Rog, the giants of Europe losing football games. Former Chelsea man Miroslav Stumbling. 87th minute header earned Slovakia a shocking victory in Žilina. Friday, Spain, which had not lost a qualifying game since October 2006.
Rog,
they bounced back on Sunday with a 4-0 win over Luxembourg.
14 straight away wins come to an end for the Spanish. Mm-hmm. Their dignity is just being stripped away layer by layer. 8 years, Dave, you remember that game, October 2006.
Oh, like it was yesterday.
The 2-0 loss away to Sweden when David Villa and Fernando Torres, remember him?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, they were both playing that day. Iker Casillas continues to look like Spanish Benny Hill on that opening goal. Slovakian goalkeeper Matos Kozacic, who plays in the Czech League, but was so tasty. He was absolutely outstanding. Again, Spain dominated 20-5 in shots, 19-3 in corners. But Diego Costa, David, in red.
Finally.
Firing blanks in red.
Yeah.
And Slovakia won the game on the counter-attack. It was all one
he
in the eye.
He scored against Luxembourg, Rog.
Well, Vicente del Bosque continues sentimentalism for his players who won him trophies like Iniesta and Iker Casillas is continuing to bite him. But yes, you love that Luxembourg goal. Though no jazz hands, David.
Yeah, well, no, he saves his jazz hands for Chelsea, Rog.
Well, I've got to say, watching him play for Spain, 550 minutes without a goal for Spain, he ended. It makes the 9 goals he scored for Chelsea seem even more remarkable as a feat to me. But it was against Luxembourg he scored. The Red Lions, the Rode Leeuwen. Red here, a euphemism for enfeebled. Do you know Luxembourg is the least populated country in the European Union?
Yeah, didn't know that.
The only famous person I could find related to the country is George Patton.
Wow, really?
He's buried there.
Oh, interesting. That's fascinating stuff, Rog. Iceland 2, the Netherlands 0. Let me read that again, Rog. Iceland 2. That is a real country. Netherlands 0. 2 goals from Swansea City's Gylfi Sigurdsson and Iceland all 3 points over a flailing Arjen Robben and Co. Monday. Iceland have 9 points in their first 3 qualifying games. The Netherlands only have 3.
Oh, David. 2 things going on here.
Well, both teams will still qualify to the 24-team Euros.
Everyone's in.
Everyone's in. Luxembourg might make
it's
it.
It's like the NHL playoffs.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, 2 things are going on here.
Yeah.
First, Iceland.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, very good.
Very good.
Very good.
Second, the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Crap. I mean, let's talk about Iceland. 323,000 people live in that beautiful country.
Less than the population of Croydon, Rog.
15 years ago, they invested in youth coaching and infrastructure.
Uh-huh.
They installed full-size indoor football pitches in every major town.
Yeah.
And small artificial football pitches near as many schools as they could find.
Mm-hmm. Just like the Football Association. Oh, no, not at all like the Football Association.
Icelandic GFOP Thomas Dór Podhedsson tweeted us to say, at Men in Blazers, no Icelander stared into Robin's dodgy flapper vortex last night. Historic result ensued. I just imagined all these Icelandic coaches with very snug-fitting tracksuits on their tummies holding up pictures of Arjen Robben's dodgy flapper and just desensitizing their players to its lethal effects.
Can I just tell you the most remarkable thing I noticed during this match is that the sound that the Icelandic fans make is a different sound as a collective than any football stadium, any football match I've ever seen.
How would you describe the sound?
Well, do you know, when we were kids, remember that one of the few football games was on every year was when they played the youth internationals, like the under-15s, England versus Germany.
And it was all high-pitched squeals.
And it was high-pitched squeals.
Yeah, from the 11-year-old boys. Come
it's
on,
not
England.
Exactly that, but it's a little bit more, it's closer to that than to a regular
Maybe
football game.
Maybe if you're that close to the North Pole, your voice doesn't break until very late in
life. Or it could have been the Penguins.
I'll
the
say,
other thing I was thinking.
Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Yeah.
Skaldic poetry will be written about that man. Uh-huh. He deserves his own epic Nordic saga to be penned in his honour. Yeah. At His Majesty Byron, what is Iceland's most impressive quality?
Uh-huh.
Is it A, NATO nation without a standing army?
Yeah.
B, as many Miss World winners as the United States?
Yeah.
Or C, dominating Euro football?
Mm-hmm. Very good beards as well, Rog. Some of the finest beards I've ever seen on a football
team. Yeah, it's probably B for me. Una Birna Wüstenstor was a model, actress, lawyer and anthropologist.
Uh-huh.
Much of what I look in life as an ideal life partner. Second, the Netherlands, David.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, the transition from the strict regime of Louis van...
Gaal.
...to the more relaxed Goose... ...Ridding.
Yeah.
They call him Goose Geluk, or Lucky Goose. Has not been smooth. Wesley Schneider described the difference as shifting from a, quote, tough school teacher, put your hand out, to a regime run by a, quote, friendly uncle. I didn't like that, friendly uncle.
Yeah.
That's a bit, once were warriors. Without Van Gaal grabbing the team by the undercarriage, Dave, this Dutch team had just become incredibly mediocre. The 7-1 against Spain now seems just like it's given us a skewed perception. Their players sloppy. Tactics are just all over the place. The feuds are back. You love feuds.
Oh, and the Dutch do feuds like no one.
Van Persie and Jan Klaus Huntelaar are arguing on the field. This is, David, modern Dutch football as we're more familiar
with. And they lost pretty much every 50-50 ball if you saw the game, and just resorted to sort of long balls from Daley Blind up front to try and get behind the Icelandic defence.
It's the Penguins.
Tough way to watch the Dutch play football. Rog, in the second instalment of How Did This Happen, Argentina 0, Brazil... 2, Rog. Atletico Mineiro's Diego Tardelli scored twice to lift Brazil to victory over their fellow South American superpower in, of course, Beijing, China, Rog. Leo Messi did miss a first-half penalty that would have tied the game at one.
The thing I loved about this game was the high levels of smog that engulfed the Chinese capital. There was an orange pollution alert, which is the second highest level.
Yeah.
The pollution was 20 times the maximum daily exposure recommended by the World Health Authority.
Uh-huh.
Brazil's players were locked into their hotel for much of the week. Uh-huh. Liverpool's Philippe Coutinho said, "The air is a bit strange. Sometimes in the middle of the day, you think it's the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. It's a bit dusty."
A bit dusty.
Sepp Blatter will read this kind of article and say it sounds awful. Why exactly are we not hosting a World Cup in this place?
Very, very true, Rog. Argentina did bounce back with a huge victory over Hong Kong, who I had no idea even fielded a football team, Rog. Ireland 7, Gibraltar 0. This had to be the worst news of the weekend, Rog. A blow to citizen football as Ireland thumps the mighty Gib. In Dublin, the LA Galaxy's Robbie Keane.
You bully Robbie Keane.
Netted a hat-trick in the first 20 minutes to keep the Gib in the basement of Group D. Gibraltar is playing Georgia as we tape this, and we're convinced they're going to get a result.
Oh, David, I've got to say, Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
Within 80 minutes, second fastest hat-trick for Ireland in the Euro qualifiers. Although it was another Keane, Roy, sometimes Aston Villa coach, who got all the post-game coverage.
Yeah.
He shaved off the maroon sailor beard, David.
Yeah, he doesn't look as threatening without the beard, does he, Rog?
He doesn't, but he did the trick. 7-0. You know me, Dave. I'm an avid reader of the Gibraltar media.
You love it.
And I love this piece by Joe Garcia in the Gibraltar
and not just for the crossword,
Panorama.
Rog. Not just for the crosswords.
The cryptic, I can do it up to Wednesday.
Thursday gets hard.
Joe Garcia wrote the following.
Yeah.
"We must not think that having 7 goals scored against us is a national disaster. Yeah. Read on," was the headline.
Yeah.
"The people who appear to think having 7 goals scored against us is a national disaster. But what was unfair was the scathing attack against Gibraltar in the match report in the English newspaper The Guardian, where Alan Smith wrote that, quote, the Euro 2016 qualifiers are worse off for including teams such as Gibraltar." How insular can some Englishman be? Has he forgotten when England had 7 goals scored against them by Hungary?
It's very true.
That was in 1954, David.
Yeah.
We still had the bloody empire then.
Yeah.
It goes on and on and on and on. But it ends with the most beautiful phrase of all time, which if I had a tattoo, which I never will, it would say, "Let us not feel dejected. Let us be realistic." I just love that sentiment. I have to say, game film note, which I watched this game many times to prepare for when the men in Blazers national team line up against Mighty Gib. Their goalkeeper, Jordan Perez, or I should say goalkeeper slash fireman, Jordan Perez.
Yeah.
He likes, when he's under pressure, he likes to shoot the ball into his own net. I think we can exploit that.
That's very good. I would like to see, though, I mean, not that I have ever had any sympathy ever written in The Guardian, Rog, But how good would a crap World Cup be? Gibraltar, Andorra, San Marino. Luxembourg, San Marino.
Men in Blazers national team.
England. Like, you could put all these teams into Scotland, into one tournament. It would be amazing, Roger. It would be really good.
An NIT.
An NIT World Cup. Very, very good. Finally, Rog, if this does not make you feel old, nothing will. Norway's Martin Ødegaard became the youngest player to appear in a European Championship qualifier in his side's victory over Bulgaria in Oslo. The Strømsgodset midfielder, he is 15 years and 300 days old. He came on in the 64th minute with the score tied at 1-1, and he looked useful, Rog.
Yeah, this didn't faze me at all, David. Yeah. It's really not that big a deal.
Yeah, really, a 15-year-old. Yeah. Puts Julian Green in perspective.
Age 15, I could have represented England too at something. Yeah, they just didn't have a national team for Unionism.
I just don't want to think about that at all. And what an awkward segue as I go into our guest intro. Our guest today comes from the halls of Congress via Scranton, Pennsylvania. He's a US senator on a quest to bring transparency to football's global governing body, FIFA. The agency's refusal to make public an internal ethics investigation into the way it awarded Qatar the 2022 World Cup has prompted him to write Sepp Blatter himself. And unlike our letters to Sepp, he's actually got read. We welcome to the pod Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey.
Do you guys only go by Dave on Raj?
Well, on this podcast, yes, but you can call us anything you want.
The Right Honourable. No.
I think it's good you guys have nicknames. You should hear what people call me.
can we save that? I want to hear about your nicknames.
You probably can't say it on the air.
Our first senator. We've had the Montenegrin ambassador to the United States before, senator, but we've never had a sitting U.S. politician.
Who was elected democratically.
Yeah, we've never had that. Senator, by way of background, it's no secret that there have been widespread corruption allegations about the way FIFA awarded Qatar, the 2022 World Cup. FIFA decided to conduct an internal investigation into the way they awarded both Russia and Qatar the World Cups in 2018 and 2022. They hired former U.S. attorney Michael Garcia, a man who was formerly the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, to lead that independent investigation. Garcia spent a year interviewing football officials from around the world and delivered a 430-page report on his findings to FIFA in September. FIFA has said they will not make that report public, despite repeated calls now from Garcia himself to do so. Can you tell us about your letter and what motivated your passion for this issue?
Well, first of all, I think just the basic issue of transparency. I obviously wrote a strong letter that raised questions about the process and basing that upon some good reporting about allegations of corruption. That was one part of it. And the other part of it was on labor standards and how workers are treated in this process of preparing for the World Cup in a place like Qatar and probably in a number of countries where it would raise some difficulties. But I think we're at a point now where even beyond the question of labor issues or corruption issues, now it's kind of come to a very basic issue of transparency. And that's something that I think anyone can understand. Even someone who doesn't share my concerns about the issues I raised in my initial letter, just I think anyone would hope that when you have an investigation like that, that it's on the public record so everybody can see what the investigation yielded. So it just, if anything, the latest actions raise even more questions about the voting for 2022 as well as 2018. So we have obviously the U.S. has a vested interest, but even apart from that, I think it's an issue of transparency.
Well, a vested interest because the U.S. bid may well have been disadvantaged by a corrupted bid, were it corrupted.
Right. And I would argue from the U.S. perspective, we should be, as any country, should be the beneficiary of a fair process, but we also happen to have a track record from the 94 World Cup, and it was a success in terms of attendance, and the fan experience was good, and it was great.
Yeah. It was great. Let me ask you, I mean, America's involved in some pretty complex foreign policy issues. We've encountered countless dictators. We've looked at warlords in the eye. How do you describe FIFA and Sepp Blatter to your Pennsylvania constituents who might not be overly familiar with their working style and structure?
Well, at some point in the history of Pennsylvania, I'm sure we run into similar similar personalities, I'll call it. But no, it's
Buddy Ryan.
there's a resistance, an obvious resistance to the transparency, a resistance to the kind of oversight or scrutiny that you would think an organization that has worldwide impact would be either more accustomed to or more comfortable with, or both. But that hasn't been the case, so we just have to keep banging the drum, so to speak.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing I love is that I believe absolutely and completely that change is only going to come from America. The English media investigations have been relentless into FIFA and Sepp Blatter, but all they seem to do is to allow him to bolster up his base in Asia and Africa. And I do believe that shaming the sponsors who are American, the Cokes, the Visas, the McDonald's, into demanding action from America is going to be the way to kind of change FIFA in an expeditious fashion. Have you spoken to US Soccer FIFA Executive Committee member Sunil Gulati? What's he told you?
Not directly, no. And there's some additional work that we need to do.
So the great sport of soccer, I'm sure that you enjoyed the World Cup and the US men's national team's performance at the World Cup this summer.
It was great. It was, you know, here's how good it was. You had members of Congress stopped in their tracks watching.
Is there a big soccer-loving lobby in Congress, Senator?
I think if there isn't one now, there's one that's growing. In fact, it was even more dramatic than I just described. You had members of Congress stopping to watch, but they actually stopped to watch during their lunch hour. That's pretty
good. And Republicans and Democrats together holding hands in harmony, agreeing on what they were seeing?
All but the holding hands part, but it wasn't harmony.
Jack Kemp would have been rolling over in his grave.
Yeah.
Last question for me, Senator. Which would you say is more kind of true to life? House of Cards or Veep?
I have to admit I have not seen Veep. So I'm gonna guess that it's closer to reality. I think I saw virtually every episode of House of Cards. But as I told their producers, or not their producers, but some of their advertising folks who showed up on Capitol Hill one day with a camera, interviewing members of Congress about House of Cards, it was at a point in time when I had not been caught up. I had only seen maybe season one at that point. And they said, what would you like to talk about with regard to the new season? And I said, well, guys, I'm really far behind, so I'm not a good subject for an interview. I said, but I just want you guys to know, and this is on camera somewhere in their files, I said, no one around here is that interesting. Which is true.
Well,
thankfully, House of Cards is not a good reflection, at least in terms of the violence and the other stuff.
There's more of it in real life, you'd say.
No, I think it was the opposite. Well, you've been interesting to us today, Senator. Thank you so much for your time taking away from the very important work you do for the people of Pennsylvania
and our GFOPs in Scranton.
And all of our GFOPs in Scranton, without a doubt. And thank you for taking on this cause for more transparency in FIFA. Let us know if you hear back from his Uber president, Sepp Blatter. That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks very much, guys. Great to be on.
Lovely man, Rog.
Oh, but inside that lovely man, there's a Frank Underwood.
Yeah,
it's
really.
Going to take Sepp Blatter out hard.
We will see. We should say, in full transparency, we make this podcast at Embassy Row. Embassy Row is a wholly owned subsidiary of Sony, who are a major World Cup sponsor. I'm proud to say the first company to call for more transparency from FIFA. And on to the Ravens from Seth. Putnam, dear Positive and Toilet, after watching manager Don Mattingly concede defeat to the St. Louis Cardinals during what might be his last appearance in an LA Dodgers uniform, the thought struck me, what if Premier League managers took a page from baseball and dressed in their team's full kit? Brilliant question. It's one of the things that's always most amused me about baseball. Who would wear it best? My pick is Arsene Wenger. The tight Gunners jerseys would keep his flabby arms looking firm. But I suppose Neil Warnock would give him a run for his money. Obrigado, mates. Rock on. Seth Putnam. Who would look good? I'd love to see Steve Bruce,
that's
Rog,
why I think,
in a Hull Tigers uniform.
I got to say, Arsene in an Arsenal jersey,
yeah,
would be even more invasive and revealing an NSFW than the Fappening.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Steve Bruce, but why, David? Yeah. What is it about him that made on both our minds go to that?
Yeah. Do you know what? So I've been thinking a lot about Steve Bruce. I'm not ready to break it out yet, but I've been working on impressions of all the Premier League managers. I've got a lot of nice people wrote to me about my impression of Arsene Wenger, which actually I listened back to and I didn't think it was good at all. But I've decided I'm going to try and get down as many of the Premier League managers as possible. And Steve Bruce, I just love him. Every time he opens his mouth, I just love him.
I love a tummy.
Yeah, you love a tummy.
I want to go on the record. I do. I love a tummy. And when I think of Steve Bruce in a whole jersey.
Yeah.
I just think of that line from Julius Caesar, Shakespeare.
Yeah.
When Caesar says, I want the men around me to be fat, healthy-looking men who sleep at night. And whenever I hear that line, I think of Steve Bruce. The tracksuit manager
He's so both Shakespearean and Roman,
Steve Bruce. I've never understood why baseball managers do dress up. They must feel ridiculously redundant, like getting into pulling on those tight pants every time.
I wonder when it started. I'm sure it didn't happen all the way from the beginning. There must have been just one who started doing it and the other guys just said, oh, I like that. It feels like you're really doing a job in baseball.
I mean, English football used to have a lot more tracksuit managers.
Yeah.
It used to be Brian Clough, a legendary character for good and for bad in the English game, used to always wear the same green sweatpants.
Yeah.
But the more football's become about image rights and the more managers have tried to impose their identities on the sport, the more they've kind of gone up market. And general suaveness is ensued. Crystal Palace's Neil Warnock, one of the last holdouts, and Tony Pulis at Palace before him.
Yeah,
there's an old adage that I love that my mate
Alan Irvine at WBA, he does it too, Rog.
Jose Mourinho sometimes does it. It's almost as if he's trying to show derision towards his opponent, and other times he turns out all like he's just completely walked out of a bottle
GQ,
of Dracar.
Yeah.
Jamie Glassman, my mate, always reminds me of this old adage that I love. A tracksuit manager will generally shower with his players, whereas a manager who wears a suit will have their own private shower in their own changing room.
Interesting.
Can you imagine showering with your players?
Yeah, it reminds me of that Lampard story that I refer you to our Lampard interview on YouTube, Rog. Okay, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Chris Black. Rog and Davo, I recently spent a few days in the Disney area of Orlando for a work event. As a mid-20s male with no children, I can think of few worse places to spend 3 days. While waiting in a long line at the Orlando Airport men's bathroom yesterday, I noticed a rather large British family behind me. One of the children was wearing a Cardiff jersey and bombarding his father with comments about how badly he needed to go to the bathroom and how desperate he was to jump the line or queue. I suggested that the boy could cut me. To my surprise, the man grabbed his son by both shoulders and bellowed, "No!" before following up with a quiet, "Thank you." Other than being overweight, balding, and wearing what I imagine are the English equivalent of Crocs, he very well could have been Gandalf for that brief second. So mystical was his reaction. My question is, was there a hidden depth to what lay behind this man's obstinate refusal to allow his son to cut in line? Was he preparing his son for a lifetime of disappointment as a Cardiff fan? Would this boy have been free to cut in line had Vincent Tan never discovered soccer? Would the memory of walking around a foreign country with shorts soaked in urine while wearing said Cardiff jersey erode all memories of a Disney trip? In Mix We Trust, Chris Black.
Oh, are you sure it was an English child in a Cardiff jersey and it wasn't a Federico Macheda sighting?
Yeah, well, it could have been. Could have been, Rod. Yeah, well, I mean, there is a big principle.
Massive.
Britons like standing in line. They like queuing. They don't think that we should. And the way you get a nation to queue is you don't allow your son to cut in line, however badly he needs to go to the bathroom, Rod.
We blame Vincent Tan for a lot on this podcast.
We do.
We're not
too much.
This is not about football.
Yeah.
It's even more serious than that, this issue in the Orlando airport bathroom.
Yeah.
It's about queuing in England.
Yeah.
There's an old quote, it's the very substance of all that keeps civilization mannered and orderly. Mm-hmm. George Mike's quote, an Englishman, even if he's alone, forms an orderly queue of one.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm going to say to you, and this is important. If you only listen to one thing on this podcast ever, David, it's got to be this, right?
Okay, go.
If you don't queue,
yeah.
How are you meant to savour the repressed delight of tutting passively at strangers who try and cut in line?
Yes, I know, you're
and
right.
By strangers, I mean Europeans.
Yeah.
Queuing is...
Continentals.
It's the only way my mum knows she's English. It's the only way she feels alive.
Yeah. It's very, very true. Very, very true, Rog. Having said that, I think that I've lived in America long enough that if my child desperately needed to go to the bathroom and a very nice man like Chris Black offered to allow my child to go in front, I definitely would allow him. I would definitely take you up on your offer, Chris. Anyway, a one of our special patches on its way to you. Thanks so much, Chris. Your weekend looks like this. Saturday. Thank God the Premier League is back. It's back, Rog.
I feel like Cary Grant getting back together with a wheelchair-bound Deborah Kerr at the end of Affair to Remember. I've missed
Saturday,
it.
Saturday, 7:45 a.m. Manchester City versus Tottenham.
I remember them.
Saturday, 10 a.m. Crystal Palace versus Chelsea.
I love you, Crystal Palace.
Sunday, 8:30 a.m. QPR versus Liverpool. And before that, Friday night, Rog, in MLS, Portland versus Real Salt Lake.
Friday night lights.
Salt Lake, I said. Real Salt Lake. That would be a great name for a team. At 10 p.m. Eastern. All games are on the NBC family of networks.
Before we go, David, can we just get an update on the GDOP?
Oh, my word. We have even more entries. I'm actually going down to Nashville. I know many are asking. I'm going down there on November the 13th to pick up the dog in Columbia, Tennessee.
You're going to be one of those annoying people with a little doggy basket on the plane.
No, I'm not. I'm going to fly down there. I'm going to rent a car and drive that poor puppy squealing all the way back to New York City. It's about 14 hours. I'm going to stop
who's
in a couple of places.
Who's going to be Susan Sarandon and who's going to be Gina Davis?
Well, I think, as you know, I'm always going to be Gina Davis in that scenario.
Oh, we've had some great names that have come in.
Brilliant names.
At EJH72.
Yeah.
If Davo's dog is a snarling chronic humper, he must be called John Terrier.
That's a good one.
It is a great one. Yeah, I like
unfortunately,
that.
Unfortunately, it's a lab.
At Sanchez 14.
Yeah.
I was hoping you had an update on the GDOP. My suggestion is that you call it Ross Barkley the second.
Well, I do quite like Barkley. I must say Barkley, both the name of Ross Barkley, the play on the word bark, and also the Premier League sponsors. I do quite like that.
It's the future.
Yeah, but future. But I also quite like Guinness. I think Guinness is a good name. And Arlo Black still is a leading contender. But I haven't made the name. The Sorting Hat has not chosen the name yet, Rog. Many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men and Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the costs of creating the show. What are you putting in the store this week, Rog?
A book.
Yep.
Knish.
Yep.
In Search of the Soul Food.
Yep.
By Laura Silver.
Wow.
It's a definitive biography of the Knish, the Yiddish sampling once found all over Brooklyn via Poland.
Yeah.
Now a rare find. It is a beautiful volume.
Yeah.
Really places itself at the nexus of cooking, identity, and romance. I love all three of those things, David.
Yeah, I said I missed the Premier League so much this weekend. I read a book. The book I read, John Williams, Stoner. An absolutely fantastic novel.
Is that
novel.
Rob Stone's biography?
It is pretty much. Pretty much. I tell you, I would have more likely read that book. Reading the back cover, it's one of those books you have no interest in reading whatsoever. A piece of, you know, a period piece about a professor at the University of Missouri who led a pretty anonymous life. But it is a page-turner of a novel. Absolutely brilliant.
I would buy a multi-volume Rob Stone biography in a heartbeat.
He
Someone
would be
write
like
it.
Shakespeare. No, he should write it. It would be like Winston Churchill, the war years.
I'd love volume two, the young Rob, young Rob Stone years.
You could write a whole book about Julie Stewart Binks and Warren Barton. Individual volumes on
these
each of
these co-hosts.
These
are volume 11 and 12, David. But I'd love to know Rob when he was little, just running around. What kind of a guy. I bet he was amazing.
Oh, his little legs. His little legs would be brilliant. Other ways to connect to us, Rog. Our Wikispaces, meninblazers.wikispaces.com/... It's fan-maintained, Rog, and it is a wonder of the modern world. Also, find us at meninblazers.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there, The Raven. Twitter, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers. Instagram, at Men in Blazers. On Facebook, we've got a subreddit. It's maintained by GFOP Akshay. That's at reddit.com/r/ Men in Blazers. You can always email us, meninblazers@gmail.com. We love your emails.
Love them. Each and every one, we try and answer them all.
Send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. Vendorpunked, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Size of the day.
Is that your analysis?
It's a tweed.
Oh, abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Oh, kung fu fight in America. Love you, David.
Love you, Rog, always.
Come on, England. Did I just say that?
Yeah, that sounds bizarre.